All rise. Court is in session. Call now, 215-263-1079. Court Radio 107.9 WRNB is on. Brought to you exclusively by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com.
And a good morning to you, and welcome to Court Radio. Thanks for joining us. This is Dean Weitzman, your host today for Court Radio. Your host most days for Court Radio, except when I'm out of town. Anyway, thanks for joining us. I know you could be anywhere this beautiful Sunday morning, and you've chosen to be with us, and we appreciate that. And I am joined, as usual, by the one, the only, and the famous David M. Rappaport.
Good morning.
Good morning, David.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Good morning. It's another Sunday morning in Philly, you know, can't beat it.
A little wet?
It's a little
bit. Maybe a little wet later, but it's okay. Looks good.
Yeah, the humidity has definitely increased in Philadelphia. We're almost into the dog days of Philadelphia's summer.
It's coming.
Yeah.
It's here, actually.
Yeah, yep. We were talking last week, I think, about those... were we talking here last week about the covers for sofas?
Plastic covers.
You don't want them this week.
Yeah.
Well, these are the days when little Dean was laying on his mom's sofa, and you'd fall asleep. We didn't have central air, and you would be stuck to the sofa.
You'd become one with the sofa. You'd have to peel it off of your skin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ouch.
So. Anyway, we're here today, and we're joined as well by our special guest star. I want to get the topic out before we get into chatting about the events of this week so that people can begin to think about what it is we're talking about today. So today's topic, drum roll, please. Thank you very much.
That was my...
Yeah, our producer, Red Chris, was fumbling.
He wasn't quick enough.
I know. I have to give him like the wink or something. This week's topic is Social Security disability. And it's an area that people oftentimes don't really understand how long it takes to get a claim handled, what needs to be done, whether you need to have representation. So we've brought in... The Philadelphia expert on all things related to Social Security, my friend and yours, Paul Young. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Dean. It's nice to be here today.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you. You know, the listeners don't know this, but Paul and I grew up together.
Yes,
you know, we hung on the same corner, and we went to the same schools. Ooh. And
Paul should have some nice stories then for us, maybe in the future.
He was
about little Dean Weitzman.
He was sworn to secrecy before he was cleared before today's show. He's all right. So anyway, Paul is a fellow member of the bar who does nothing but Social Security and also some bankruptcy work. So he's multifaceted, and he's going to talk to us about what all is involved in Social Security claims. And for the first caller who calls with a question on point for Social Security, you will be this week's My Philly Lawyer gift pack recipient. So think about your questions regarding Social Security. But let's move on for a moment about what's going on in and around Philly this week, David. What do we have to talk about?
Well, in Philadelphia, I guess we have to mention the Phillies, a 14-6 blowout last night, and Rollins grand slam, and what else is there to say? They're playing very well, and
the hottest team in baseball right now.
Actually, Paul, you were there, weren't you?
Yes, I was, and
exciting.
Very exciting. It seems like all the talk has been around whether Roy Halladay's going to come, and that seems to be a major topic at the Phillies game and everywhere else about the Phillies. So we'll see.
I assume it was a sellout or close to it.
I was a little surprised. It wasn't really as big a crowd as I expected, probably because of the off time.
Right.
Every game I've been to this season has been a sellout.
Yeah, that's
maybe that's because I was there. There was advance notice that My Philly Lawyer was going to be at the game, and they got a few extra tickets sold. Now, we're joined by Ms. Tiffany Bacon,
the one, the only. Good morning. I apologize. Things didn't go quite as I planned this morning, But it happens every now and again.
Absolutely.
And, you're here, it doesn't work out.
You're here to check me because I saw when I suggested that it was perhaps me who was bringing the extra folks into the stadium,
yeah.
Tiffany was giving me a definite thumbs down.
Everyone was giving you a eye. Those headphones are a little... Do they fit that head? Do they make headphones?
That's terrible. Well, good morning to you. This is Court Radio. And hey, if you have a legal question, now would be the time to ask. Just give us a call at 215-263-1079. We are here to serve you. And keep in mind, Court Radio is brought to you by the Law Offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Don't you be afraid to give us a call right now. And you don't always have to give us your name in case you have a question. You're like, I'm a little embarrassed to ask that. But we'd like to have your name. If not, it's okay. You can be anonymous.
Thank you, Tiffany.
You're welcome, Dean.
So, yeah, as I said, the first caller on topic, Social mm-hmm. Security, will be the recipient this week of the My Philly Lawyer gift pack.
Nice.
And what's that number they call again?
215-263-1079.
Thank you. Gates. Professor Gates.
Have to talk.
We, yeah. You know, I mean, I have to say that I've been talking to a lot of people about this, and I've been thinking about this. I think that there was some racial profiling when the call was made.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the neighbor didn't know who his neighbor was,
yeah.
you know? Mm-hmm. And then when the police came, I think probably there was some racial profiling. But really, the real deal, I think, mm-hmm. was that the officer got his back against the wall when mm-hmm. he realized he made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, oftentimes people in power mm-hmm. and cops in power in those circumstances just don't know how to say the magic words, I'm sorry.
Oops, yep. My bad.
Made yeah. a mistake. Bye. Sorry about that. See you later.
And so it gets into a major mm-hmm. power struggle.
Right.
And the professor was right. It was his house. He was right to be a little bit, you know, put off mm-hmm. by this. And I think what happened is, as he explains it, mm-hmm. he trotted off to the kitchen to get his ID, thinking to himself, this is ridiculous. This mm-hmm. is my house. But okay, I'll play along. I'll show them my ID, and that'll be the end of it. And when he showed him the ID, he probably said something like, you know, see, it's my house.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
expletive.
You blank, yeah. blank, blank. Yeah, exactly.
Expletive
well,
series.
You knucklehead.
Knucklehead, yeah.
Okay.
There you go. That's
you
good.
Knucklehead. And the cop was in the, and that was the point where the cop should have said, Professor Gates, you're right. I'm sorry. And that's just not in the lexicon of many officers.
Well, yeah, and there's and the police officer tried to explain that, you know, Gates kept on being belligerent and loud. And my thought on that is, if you're a police officer, aren't you trained or you should be trained or cognizant of the fact that people are going to be upset
mm-hmm.
when they're being either arrested or when you're confronting them? You need to be able to deal with that. You shouldn't be angered by that. You should be able to diffuse the situation rather than escalate it.
Right, and no doubt, I wasn't there, but I have to right. say the cop probably the one who escalated it.
I agree.
Gates probably, you know, said, look, you're in my house, knucklehead.
Right.
And that's where the cop should have just said, I'm sorry, you're right, professor. But instead, he probably tried to explain
sure.
himself.
Well, he probably said, don't call me knucklehead. You know, what are you doing? Step outside. That kind of stuff.
Right. Mm. Or maybe he said, we thought it might have been somebody who was invading your home and trying to justify his actions.
Right.
Don't justify your actions at that point. Just say, I'm sorry, and get the heck out of the guy's house.
Right.
Mm. And that's just, you know.
Not what happened at all.
And nobody wants to say they're sorry. You know, cop says, I'll never say I'm sorry. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, just come on. Now, it's not that big a deal. It's easy. I'm sorry.
And the funny mm-hmm. thing is they, you know, of course, he's charged with the catch-all charge of disorderly conduct, which,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But really, what is disorderly conduct? Was the professor endangering anyone? He's in his own house and he's screaming and yelling. Okay. Are any of the police officers endangered? I don't think so. He doesn't have a weapon and there are four officers with a weapon. Is the public endangered? I don't think so.
It's obvious. You're right, because they dropped the charges.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. You know, if there was any legitimacy to those charges,
mm-hmm.
they would have maintained that those charges.
Well, did you see the chief said, in hindsight, those charges were dropped a little hastily. We should have looked into that a little more before we dropped them. We didn't just drop them because of the situation.
Right. You look like what you are, somebody who made the wrong decision and handled it poorly. That's all. I wasn't there. I don't know if that particular officer, if race was his guiding principle, but definitely I would say with absolute certainty, ego was involved.
Yeah. I really think the ego was the big thing. And look, the police officer, I've heard him on the air. He's explained his actions. He sounds like a very reasonable guy. I'm sure he's a great police officer. Again, as I said before, emotions got the best of everyone. But in my opinion, that shouldn't happen to police officers. They're trained or should be trained not to get emotional. They need to be level-headed. So you have to fall on your sword and say, look, it's my fault. And like you said, you got to apologize for it. But
how often does that happen?
Well, instead, they're still not apologizing. They're still sticking their head in the sand. It's crazy.
Yeah, it doesn't happen too often, and that's oftentimes why my Philly lawyer gets involved. Because somebody doesn't just say they're sorry, you know? And then somebody wants to get, they want to get their piece of the person because they just didn't say they were sorry. Mm-hmm. And anyway, if you got some comments about the Gates episode, please give us a call.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
215-263-1079. This is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 FM. We have a caller with a Social Security question. Brenda is calling in from Philadelphia. Brenda, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Brenda. And listen, Brenda, after you ask and we answer your question, stay on the line, and our producer, Red Chris, will get your information so we can get the gift pack out to you. And thanks for being the winner of this week's My Philly Lawyer gift pack.
Oh, thank you.
All right. What's your question, Brenda?
It's concerning SSI.
Okay.
I received two children 3 years ago from an abusive situation, their aunt. And I received SSI for them 3 months later. I requested that the month that they were taken out, the next month, which would have been in July, be given to me. Over a period of 3 years, it has not. And I was wondering, is that proper or do I have a claim or something?
Well, Brenda, let me ask you a couple follow-up questions if I could. Were they receiving SSI when you obtained custody of the children?
Yes. I didn't know it, but I did request it. Mom told me, and I requested it. We went there together and applied for it, but the transfer was not made. I received them in June. I didn't get any money for them until August.
Okay. Well, first let me start, just for other listeners as well. As the difference, just so it's clear for some of the other listeners, that there's SSI and SSD primarily for forms of benefits of disability. SSI is most times either if someone doesn't have enough work credits or, as in your instance, when there's children involved, and it's usually based on a disability. Now, if they were receiving SSI, it's also economic-based. So I'm assuming, provided are they getting SSI now?
Yes.
Okay. So the only period in question was the question time you received the children, they started living with you, until they actually started receiving the benefits. Is that right?
They were receiving the benefits before me.
Right. And then there was the lapse period.
I got them in the middle of June.
Okay.
So I didn't expect to receive anything in for June. But Social Security was informed in time enough to let that party know that they should not receive July's checks. But Social Security allowed that person to receive July's checks, and I've never received them, which I in turn borrowed the money, had to repay it back over a period of a year or two, and it was hard, and I just think it was unfair.
Now, when did you start receiving the SSI payments for them?
August.
Okay.
All right, so there's a one-month period where the benefits went to the prior guardian of the children instead of being directed to you, the new guardian.
Yes.
Okay. I would believe that if they were living with you by June, that you should have been the recipient of the SSI benefits for them. What I think you need to do is continue to battle with, unfortunately, so as many of you know and as many people have experienced, Social Security is a real bureaucracy. And I think what you have to do is, unfortunately, continue to battle with Social Security to try to get that one-month payment returned. And what they can do is try to take action against the original recipient to try to get the money back. But unfortunately, I'm glad at least in your case, there was only a one-month period that was in question. They didn't continue to mail the payments incorrectly to the old address and to once you did have custody. So I would say to you, just continue to try to get it for July because it does seem like you're entitled to it for that month.
Where do I go to battle?
Well, the local, where about do you live?
Philadelphia.
Okay. Whichever local office is closest to you, SSI claims are handled at the local office as compared to SSD claims where payment is usually handled in Baltimore. So you just have to...
I've even put it in the hands of one of the officials from the city who visited my area, but I haven't heard anything. And I called to ask had there been any progress on the case, and I was told by his assistant that since they've received the money, it's really nothing that can be done, and I just don't believe that.
Well, I think
that's stealing.
Well, I just think you have to continue to try to battle with Social Security and get them to try to put pressure on the person to return the funds.
All right, Betty, thank you. And hold on.
Brenda, sorry.
hold on the line, Brenda, for Red Chris, who will get your name and address for the My Philly Lawyer Pack.
All right, thank you so much for calling, and you have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, we also have Brandon on the phone with a question. He's calling in from Northeast Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Hey,
Brandon. Good morning, Brandon.
Oh, yeah, this is Bernard.
Bernard, sorry.
Okay. We're getting our bees mixed up this morning.
Yeah.
So sorry, Bernard. Good morning. What's your question?
Okay, my question is this. Last year in November, I was diagnosed with lung cancer.
I'm sorry to hear that, Bernard.
Immediately, my doctor, filled out all the papers and got me straightened out to go on disability. This is in California. And my wife and I had to move here. She got a job here, and my disability is going to be running out, I guess, in a few months. And I want to know what would I do to proceed from here to keep my disability because I still can't work.
Now, when you say your disability might be running out, was that on a disability plan from an employer or a disability plan or Social Security disability?
Well, it's coming from the state of California.
I'm sorry, Bernard, is your radio on in the background?
No, it isn't.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so you were receiving some type of state benefit, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay, probably what you should do if you haven't done yet is you should immediately apply for... Have you worked for a number of years, Bernard?
I had worked. I was working through a union, and I was kind of like a private contractor.
Okay, but you had worked for, let's say, 5 out of the last 10 years?
Yeah, for the local, yeah.
Okay. Then what I think you should do, because Social Security is a program, it wouldn't matter what state you're in. It sounds like you certainly might be a candidate for it. What you should do if you haven't done so already is get an application in, because the way Social Security disability benefits work is you have to have an illness or injury which is expected to last for at least a one-year period. Okay, and it sounds like you have that type of illness or injury. And once you get the application in, it's retroactive. So they can go back up to a one-year period for payment purposes. They could actually go back as far as the illness or injury takes you, but you can only get paid for a one-year period. So I think the first thing you should do is get the application in. Hopefully you get it initially. Unfortunately, as you might be aware, a lot of people have heard, over 70% of people get denied initially.
70%?
Yes, over 70%.
Wow.
I have my own feelings as to why. I think, you know, Social Security likes to say they want someone to be evaluated at the hearing level, which is after the initial denial, so that the trier of fact can assess their credibility. And
well, what do you have to do to file that preliminary application, the one that 70% chance you're going to get denied?
There's three ways you can do it. Dean, you're exactly right. The first thing I do is get it in. You either go to the local office, the closest one to you. You can call the Social Security Administration, which is 800-772-1213. They can set up a time and date for you to get the application in. Or you can simply go online at www.ssa.gov, and you can get an application in online.
All right, so call them, the 800 number, go online, or go to your local office. But get the application in ASAP, because if you've got a disability, they will only go back as far as the date you filed the application.
Yes, for purposes of payment on an SSD claim, which is when you had the work credits, they can go back up to a year for payment, but can't go further than the year from when you applied.
Okay.
And for SSI, it's only from the date you actually applied. So in your case, Bernard, it sounds like it would be SSD, but I think you should get it in, the application in, as quickly as possible.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bernard, for calling in.
The one thing I would say, if you get denied, if you're one of the 70%, you should probably at that point hire an attorney who knows about this.
Absolutely, because unfortunately, can't tell you how many people that I personally speak with a week where the appeal process has lapsed, and once the appeal process has lapsed or they didn't complete the forms correctly and get them in, at that point, they're starting from scratch.
Let me ask you a question, Paul. What's the difference between the SSI and SSD?
Well, there's a couple differences. SSD, you have to have enough work credits, and that simply means for most people, they've had to have worked 5 of the preceding 10 years, and the work credits carry forward. So as a common rule, if someone has a long work history, they're probably going to be an SSD application. And the difference is SSD isn't at all income-based. So you can have another household income. You can have another form of income, such as a pension or a veteran's benefit, and you'd still qualify. It's not at all income-based. Yep. SSI traditionally is for someone who doesn't have a long work history. So it might be someone who, for various reasons, hasn't worked, or it can serve in certain cases as a supplement to SSD when someone has very low earnings, and the SSI could just serve to supplement the SSD as an additional payment.
Okay, so you're going to again get more money through SSD than you would through SSI?
In most cases, except for the person who has a long work history but a very low income.
Ah.
So somebody might have worked 20 hours a week consistently earning
minimum wage.
Right, minimum wage, exactly. They would then probably get SSD of a certain amount and then a supplement if they're approved for SSI.
Okay. And what is it you have to prove? What type of disability is compensated?
Well, in order to get disability, you have to show that you have an illness or injury that's likely to last a minimum of a one-year period. So one thing that I think some people get confused with is Social Security isn't for someone who has a temporary total impairment. It's for someone who has an impairment that's likely to last at least a one-year period. Now, you don't have to apply after the 1 year. You can apply during that period. And it also has to prevent you from performing any gainful employment on a continuous and sustained basis.
So here it is. If you're a waiter your whole life and you have some disability which prevents you from using your right arm and you can no longer carry trays and be a waiter, but you're still able to talk and you can work in an office setting, maybe be a bill collector. We all hate them. But you could be a bill collector, but you can't be a waiter. You're not fitting the bill to get disability.
Well, especially if a younger person. The one other factor that Social Security does take into effect is your age. So once you've reached a certain age, it becomes a little easier to get Social Security depending upon your previous occupation.
What's that age?
Well, as a general rule, 50, they break it down into under 45, 45 to 50, 50 to 55, and over 55. Once you start reaching 50, there's really a greater consideration taken into account for your previous occupation. So someone, for example, who is a general laborer who doesn't have much transferable skills and let's say now has a serious back problem, it's going to be very, if you can show that that person couldn't do something that involves a certain exertional capacity, can't lift a certain amount, he's probably going to be entitled to benefits at 53 where he might not be at 43.
Gotcha. All right. Do we have a caller?
Yes, we do. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. Now, remember, if you've been injured from an automobile accident, slip and fall, work-related mishap, or medical negligence, you can call the attorneys at Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Don't you give it a second thought. Call for your free personal consultation. And remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. They have over 100 years of combined experience. So let them aggressively fight for you. You just sit back and get well. You can call them tomorrow morning at 215-227-2727. Again, that's 215-227-2727 tomorrow. Or visit their informative website at MyPhillyLawyer.com. Right now, you can call us at 215-263-1079. Christian is calling in from Philadelphia with a question. Christian, you're live on the air with Court Radio.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering, the other day I received a letter saying that I have a ticket for work, and I didn't quite understand it, and I want to know if you can elaborate on it.
You have a ticket for what?
Work. Ticket for work.
Ticket for work. We're not familiar with what you're talking about. Yeah. Are you on is this a Social Security question?
Yes, it is.
Are you on disability now?
Yes.
Okay. And you got a letter from who?
A letter from SSI saying that I got a ticket to work.
Okay, I apologize, Christian. I'm also not familiar with that.
Seriously?
Yeah, I've never heard the actual.
What does it say?
It was just saying that it was a ticket to work, and I told somebody else about it, and they were just like, "Well, you can give it to your boss. Yeah, I mean, you can go ahead and work, but then you get your ticket back or." Something of that nature.
Well, the only thing I can think of what you might be referring to is, are you currently employed at all while you're on SSI?
No, I was in a house wire at the age of 3, so I don't work at all.
Okay, the only thing I can think of is there is an offset. When somebody's on SSI, you can continue to actually, if you're working on a very limited basis, there would be an offset for payment for the hours that you earned as an employee. So, for example, if you work 5 hours a week, there would be an offset of benefits for those 5 hours. So maybe for some reason Social Security or SSI was under the impression that you were working and they wanted that to be completed by your employer for purposes of an offset. That's the only thing I can think of.
Christian brings up a good point, which I'm going to follow up with Christian, and maybe this will answer your question, and thank you for your call. The question is, once you're on SSI, okay, or SSD, do you have an obligation to continue to prove your disability?
That's a very good question, Dean. Mm-hmm. SSI and SSD have a right to review your case periodically. However, as I tell my clients, most times, once you're on, it's pretty rare. It's called a cessation case, and that's when they try to stop your benefits. It's very rare that that happens. It's usually when your condition's either and some people are in a position where they want benefits to stop because their condition's significantly improved. But if that's not the case, and they get it's usually in the form of a questionnaire, and it usually just requires confirmation from your doctors that your condition's remained about the same. But it's not a whole process where you're starting over again.
Okay, so maybe Christian is taking that as a ticket to work.
Yes.
I.e., their Social Security is questioning his ability to, or questioning his need for continued disability benefits.
That's possible.
Okay, all right. Anyway.
I have a question.
Yes, David.
I think people would want answered.
Sure.
because we mentioned this before, if you 70% get denied, I said if that happens, you should definitely get a lawyer. Does the recipient or potential recipient of SSI or SSD have to pay their lawyer?
Okay, thank you. That is a good question because I get the question quite a bit. The way Social Security benefits work, Social Security mandates what can be charged in a case, whether it's for SSI or SSD. And the rule is you can't get paid as a representative, whether it's an attorney or a non-attorney, but most people do have attorneys. You can't get paid unless the person's successful in obtaining benefits.
Okay. And do they have to pay you out of their own pocket, or does it get paid out of the benefits?
Well, what happens is Social Security sets aside 25% of past due benefits, and it can't exceed a certain amount, and that's paid as the representative for the claimant. But again, so the administrative law judge hearing the case, who is where it ultimately ends up if someone is denied initially, they decide if that fee they feel is appropriate. And if they do feel it's appropriate, that's in most cases what you get paid.
So the bottom line is no one should feel limited in their right to pursue this because they can't afford a lawyer.
Absolutely not. In fact, I can tell you in most cases, the way the process works, once you're denied, you request a hearing, and ultimately most people who get it at that hearing level. And most judges at this point, both in Elkins Park, where a lot of the cases are heard, as well as Center City, Philadelphia, as well as the other counties we work out of in Allentown and Lehigh, a lot of the judges won't even go forward unless the claimant is represented, even though they have an option of not being, because over the years, one of the grounds for appeal, if someone lost at a hearing, was I wasn't represented, I didn't present my evidence well, and then it ended up back at that administrative law judge. So I think most of the judges have gotten to the point that they say, wait, go get an attorney, I'm not going to go forward with, especially if there's any type of history of any type of psych issues.
Okay. You're listening to Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station 107.9 FM. Call us with a legal question or a comment on our hot button topics. 215-263-1079. Pat is calling in from Philadelphia with a question. Pat, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. What's your question, dear?
Question. Mm-hmm. My daughter's father is disabled, and I was told that I could get something for her, you know, because I get no support, no anything. Well, I do get something now. She's 17 now, and when she was 15, I got an apportionment from his veterans, whatever he's getting from the Veterans Administration. But
yeah, that's a great question, Pat. And as a minor of one who is on disability benefits, the minor is entitled to his or her own disability benefits. Is that correct?
Yes, that would be correct. Your daughter should be receiving something from the Veterans Administration relating to her father's disability. So I think if she isn't, probably a good idea to immediately contact them to see what her entitlement rights would be. Now,
what age does that go to?
It used to go up
or school age.
Correct. It goes to 18. It used to go if someone continued on for secondary education, but that was done away with in the quite a while ago in the Reagan era.
Would they go retroactive if you never received it, let's say since the age of 10 to the age of 18?
No, they won't.
Okay.
No, they won't.
Will they? Can they go back 1 year?
What they can do is they can go back. I believe it's up to 6 months. For whatever reason, they don't use that year period like they do SSD.
Okay, all right. So, the bottom line is that if you're on disability, or your spouse, or the parent of your child is on disability, then your child likewise is entitled to their own disability benefits up to the age of 18. So 70% of people get denied at the first listing. What's the percentage of people who are successful out of that 70 once they go to the second level?
That's a good question. It's actually, believe it or not, a little over 70% get denied. The second level, which is if I can give you a little brief history, there used to be, and for some of your listeners, if they're in New Jersey still has what's called a reconsideration stage. And reconsideration means you have to appeal it again to Social Security, And then, again, the percentage is over 70% of those people get denied again. And then it ends up at a hearing level. In Pennsylvania, they eliminated that reconsideration stage.
Good old New Jersey.
So in Pennsylvania, if you get denied initially, you end up going right to the hearing level. And at the hearing level, that's by far your best chance in the whole process. Approximately of those percentage of people, approximately 70% of those people, that remaining group, will ultimately get the benefits at the hearing level. About two-thirds.
Wow. Okay. And so that's your once they're represented by Paul Young on the ALJ level or the administrative law judge level, 70% of your cases are successfully handled so that your client gets disability benefits.
I would say even a little bit higher. Our personal office, we try to keep track. It's been a little bit higher than that. It's been about 75% to 80%. I would say the national percentage is about 70%.
So the law offices of Paul Young beats the national average.
I'm proud to say we do. The other thing that I'd just like to point out to people is it really is important as well to have an attorney, even at the initial level. While it's not essential, it's important because statistically, more people win at even the initial level when they're represented because we can make sure that the records are produced. So if somebody is deserving right away, they might get it right away. So their chances go up there too.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Given your druthers, you would prefer to have a client at the earliest possible opportunity.
Yes, and in some cases, there's not even a fee toss because if the person's successful and there isn't really any past due benefits, it's not so much that we've really recovered much, if any, as a fee. I just think I like to meet with them initially because I can also direct them regarding their treatment. People don't realize sometimes when they have a problem how important it is to document the record that problem exists. I think the most common mistake when I meet with somebody late in the process is they have a lot of different problems that they haven't really been treating for. They've just been treating with their family physician. And half the battle really is
the medical documentation.
Would it also be true that if they fill out that initial application without an attorney and put something in there that maybe not a good description of their injury or it's something that could come back to haunt them, that's never going to be able to be taken away? That's there and it's in stone and they can't go back.
Well, we can sometimes explain that away, but I that's absolutely important. I think more so than what they put that hurts them, I think it's what they don't put.
What they don't put, right.
That hurts them.
Gotcha.
This is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. Call us with your questions, 215-263-1079. We're hearing from Hannah now from New Jersey who has a question. Hannah, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning. Morning. What's your question?
I have actually two questions. One is my husband is diagnosed with renal failure, and he has applied like almost 2 years ago, and they keep toning him down. Do we continue to do that, or?
Well, first off, let me just say that if you're not a regular listener to Court Radio, we have a rule here called the double dip rule. And that means
you are familiar with that, I know.
You only,
I can hear it in your voice.
You only get one question, Hannah.
Fine.
Your question was a good question, but I have to ask you a question in return. Do you have legal representation? I guess Paul's primary point is that those who have legal representation are more likely than not to be granted disability because you're guided through that process by an expert who's done it and been there before. Let me ask you, Paul, do you handle New Jersey cases at your office?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We handle New Jersey
cases. I guess Hannah, the good news is that tomorrow morning you should call my office and we'll get you hooked up with Paul, 215-227-2727. And hopefully, through quality legal representation, those denials will turn into an acceptance.
Okay.
All right. Have a great Sunday.
Thanks
for being a Court Radio listener.
Thank you, Hannah.
All right. We're also getting a question from Tyrone calling in from Philadelphia. Tyrone, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I have a question. I think I might be a Smithsonian case. I've been fighting Social Security with disability, SSI, SSE, all of them, for 10 years. And I had my last appeal in. I have veterans benefits. Okay, they gave me 100% unemployability. What Social Security was saying is that I could work, but I had back injuries, spinal injuries, migraines, and they said none of that was on the list. I mean, just give me, I think the judge, I don't know. I think the judge who had some kind of, it just seemed like he had a vendetta against me or something. I don't know what it was.
How old are you, Tyrone?
Right now, I'm 50. When I started, I guess I was 40.
Okay.
49, yeah.
Okay, well, according to Paul Young, the older you get, the easier it is to get disability. So, and I think you might have hit a magic number with that 50.
Well, the only problem Tyrone might run into, can I ask you a couple quick questions, Tyrone?
I had an attorney. I forgot to tell you one part. I had an attorney. I don't know if I should say their name.
That's all right. We don't need to know their name.
Okay, well, I had an attorney, and what they did, they fought the case all the way with me from beginning to end, and they just now... They decided to drop the case, send me back my paperwork, and send me a bill.
Send you a bill? Well, they shouldn't really be entitled to send you a bill.
And envelopes and stuff like that.
Well, just so you know, they first off, they shouldn't. You could tell them they're not entitled to charge you because when you take a case in a Social Security matter, your fee has to be approved. You're not approved unless you're successful. So, but a real quick question. So you went to the hearing level and you lost at the hearing level. Did it ever get appealed past that point, or is that where it ended?
Yes, I've appealed it. I've been to the hearing level several times, 8 times, as a matter of fact. If the number is correct. And it seems like I always get the same judge, and he was like, it's seemed like it was a prejudice. He wouldn't deny it regardless of what ailment I had.
Well, see, the only problem you might face is, without getting too involved in this particular issue, because this could take a whole show, is there's something called res judicata. And that means once a case has been fully decided, you can't re-decide that case from that point on. So the only type of case you might have available would be an SSI case, which would be a date of disability after the previous dates you were already denied on. But the problem with that is, from an income standpoint, you might not be qualified for SSI because you're receiving these veterans benefits. So I'd have to know a lot more, but that might be the problem that you face, that the last denial might be the final denial of the court, and then it can't be re-adjudicated or retried.
That's what this is, the last appeal, but I received the veterans 100% unemployability.
So well, one can keep in mind, is the veteran standard is a little bit different, so that unfortunately the way Social Security views it, similar with workers' compensation or long-term disability, you can be entitled to those type of benefits and not get Social Security, or vice versa. You can get Social Security and not be entitled to long-term disability or veterans benefits.
Now, thanks, Tyrone, for calling. We hope we answered your question. If you have further questions or you want to speak with Paul, just give us a call tomorrow at the office and we'll hook you up with him, 215-227-2727, and have a great Sunday. Paul, I have a question, though.
Sure.
Once Tyrone's denied, he's been denied 27 times, the question is, can Tyrone refile a new application, okay, with new information, perhaps new medical, and start fresh in a new claim?
Okay, that's a very good question, Dean. It's a complicated area of the law. Once somebody's been denied from that date back, they can't use the same disability date because the court feels as if that's been already fully adjudicated and can't be re-decided. However, if the person still has work credits available, or what's called insured status, they can use a different date after that date if they claim there's a worsening of their condition. So, for example, a lot of times when I'm representing someone, if they've been denied, even if we have it on appeal, and let's, for argument's sake, say the denial date was January 1st, 2008, if they reapply and they still have the insured status available, meaning they still had worked for a number of years and it's still possible that they could collect benefits up through, say, 2010 or 11, they can reapply with a date after that date, claiming that their condition's worsened and that they have new evidence which would suggest that they might not have been disabled when they applied with that January 1st date, but they're disabled now.
Okay, so the answer is you can.
You can under most circumstances. Unless...
I mean, if you've got an extensive work history,
yes.
You've got, you know, like 10 years of work, and you then have a disability in 07, you're using the prior 10 years, and then a couple years goes by, you don't get the disability, you've gone through that process, now you're in 2009, you still have, there's still at least 5 years back that you can look back to see that you have a work history. So you're at that point, you just go with the new date. You
absolutely.
Go see Paul. You tighten up your medical records.
Absolutely.
And away you go.
And you also have to claim, very importantly, you can't go, because there's a real tendency part of claimants to say they were disabled back to that date again. They say that date again, then the court says, uh-oh, we already told you you're not disabled that date.
Right.
So you have to allege a date after that and say, now my condition's worse, and that I have more documentation as to why it's worse than it was originally.
Okay. All right. I understand the key is to have, with most things in life, the key is to have quality legal representation, somebody mm-hmm. who does this on a regular basis so that you so that you're getting the benefit of that person's experience. So...
We
still have callers,
don't yes, we do, and it's always a great thing, and we welcome your call if you have a legal question or if you have a comment. You can always reach us at 215-263-1079. Now, in the meantime, if you're sitting back and you're wondering what to do if you or someone close to you are involved in an automobile accident, a slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice, all you have to do is contact the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer. They do have over 100 years of combined experience, and I promise they will aggressively fight for you. Just call them for your free personal consultation, and remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. For the answers to your questions and more, call 215-227-2727. Tomorrow, call 215-227-2727. You can also visit their informative website at myphillylawyer.com. Right now, we have an anonymous caller with a question, and we welcome you to the program. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. I don't have a question.
Okay.
But I do have a comment as a Social Security worker for the last 25 years.
Okay.
Clarifications, if you will. And they are, first, under no circumstances should you go into the local office to make an application. There's no paper application anymore. And the whole process begins with the phone call at the 800 number that was given. So if you walk in looking for application, they're going to send you out to make the 800 call anyway. And what the first part of it is they give you an appointment. You don't have to go in. You could do it over the phone, that kind
absolutely.
Of thing. But I want to keep people from going on a mission that's not going to come to fruition. Don't go into the office. Call the 800 number.
No, if I could, I apologize.
Oh,
I didn't mean to suggest
it's
that they could.
That's a point of clarification.
Sure. No, I didn't mean to suggest that they would take the application then. I meant they can go. A lot of people go into the office, and then the person, obviously, whether it's depending on, I don't know which office you work at, but depending on which office, they'll usually give them the number or set them up mm-hmm. for an appointment. I wasn't suggesting they could walk in and just fill out an application. And they're right. I know there's been no longer a paper application for quite a while.
So I think it's important then, and I thank you, caller, for your helpful hints. Let's give that 800 number one more time.
Sure. It's 800-772-1213. And that is the starting point or online. Or you can go into a local office just to find out how do I apply. And some of the local offices will set you up for an appointment at that point, but you won't be able to get the initial application processed when you go to the local office right away.
Okay. And the 800 number that you call, you can, through that process, you can begin your application and get an appointment at a local office?
Yes. What they'll do is, I should mention as well, as the local caller was probably referring to, is the 800 number. They'll set up an appointment at a local office, or if someone can't get to a local office, because some of our listeners and some people that I represent can't get to an office, they can then do it fully by telephone.
Really, the whole application, I mean, the whole claims process is done via the telephone?
Yes, it can be.
Oh, okay.
It can be, or it can be, or an appointment can be set up at the local office where you have to bring certain documentation, including a birth certificate.
Gotcha. We have another caller.
Yes, we do. Kevin is calling in from Philadelphia, and previous caller, thank you again for calling in. Kevin, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. What's your question, sir?
Okay, as of this moment, I'm going through a problem with identity theft in Bucks County. Now, I have 20 counts against me for something that I didn't do. I'm trying to fight, and I'm trying to figure out. Now, I've been going through court for three times right now, and I want to know, if I'm not comfortable with my lawyer in fighting this case, because he feels the charges are totally stacked against me, and I'm trying to figure out, can I be able to change my lawyer? I don't feel confident in my lawyer.
Well, is this a appointed lawyer, or did you...
Private lawyer.
Well,
okay. It doesn't matter. Appointed, private, you can always get rid of your lawyer. We're the easiest thing in the world to get rid of. You know, you just you call, you say I'm done with you. You send a letter and you get yourself a new lawyer. Of course, you know, you'll have to work out the billing arrangements with your prior lawyer. But you know, the fact is that if you can retain other counsel to represent you, they can certainly substitute their appearance. In other words, one attorney draws his appearance while the other attorney enters his appearance. Happens all the time, both civilly and criminally, and there's no impediment other than finances that would stop you from doing that.
Okay.
All right.
But why are they saying that the cases are so hard?
Well,
went up in Bucks County.
Okay. Here's two things. Number one, you're encroaching upon the double dip rule, and number two,
another violation.
Without knowing the facts, which we don't want you to get into over the airwaves, I couldn't give you an answer to why one attorney thinks that it's a difficult case or that you should, you know, assume that you're going to be found guilty, et cetera. But the bottom line is this, Kevin, and this is the critical part of your call that I think it applies to all callers. If you don't have faith in your counsel, if you've lost that trust, then you can no longer be represented by that attorney, because what you're going to an attorney for is for his or her experience and for them to guide you in this process. Well, if you don't believe your attorney and you don't think they're doing the best job for you, then you can't be guided by that attorney any longer in an efficient way. When I give advice to my clients, I expect my clients are going to accept my advice. That's why they're paying me. And when it gets to the point where they no longer trust my advice, I suggest that they go find somebody else whose advice they do trust, or get a second opinion from somebody else. Go in and spend an hour with an attorney, pay him for his hour, give him the whole lowdown on what's going on, and maybe he's going to have the same opinion as your first attorney. If two people have the same opinion about your case, then maybe it's you who might have the misconceptions regarding your case. Or the new attorney might say, you know what, I agree with you, Kevin, and I think that you need to fight this case because I think it's a winnable case. But again, you need to be with somebody who you trust. Thanks for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday, Kevin.
All right. We have June calling in from West Philadelphia. You're live on the air with Court Radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. What's your question?
My question is about Social Security as well. I have a son who has a disability, and I'm also paying child support. My question is, when I go to court, can they use that part of his income when they determine how much I would have to pay?
Because you're talking about more from a child support issue, am I right?
Yes.
Okay, well, the answer is, I'm encroaching a little bit on the domestic relations arena, which I don't profess to be an expert, but I believe that they look at your earnings and they look at the father's earnings in order to determine the child's needs. And they put that into a grid and they come up with a percentage of your earnings that you need to pay for child support. If your child has his own earnings through disability, the question is whether that those earnings will serve to mitigate or reduce your obligation.
Okay. Now, they don't...
That's the question.
Every time I go, they never use it.
Right. And my belief is that your child's earnings would not go to mitigating your obligation. They merely take your earnings and the father's earnings, come up with a total, give a percentage of your earnings for support, and that's what your obligation is.
Okay, now what if he's getting...
Okay, sorry.
Well, just to clarify, I think the reasoning behind that, you have to understand, is that the disability portion that your child's getting is sort of deemed to be something that brings the child, quote-unquote, back to the... their original disability status. In other words, it's compensating them for a problem that they have. Support is raising the child and all of the common expenses of child rearing, which wouldn't be affected by the disability at all because the disability is being compensated for. So that's kind of why they don't account for the disability money in your obligation to support the child. I think that's the rationale behind that.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, June. Thank you for calling.
Ian, you look confused.
No, I understand it, but I also understand the caller's frustration.
Sure, it's very frustrating.
Well, wait a minute. Let's assume for a moment that it's not disability, but the kid has earnings. He's a talented magician, and he makes, $200,000 a year working the old age circuit, the nursing home circuit. Thank you. And so
as an infant,
he's a 9 or 10 year
old. All right. I think that raises an interesting question.
It is.
I don't know. I'm assuming I know under I think it's called the Mickey Rooney rule, it would be in trust anyway at a certain point. So I guess the argument would be like in your example, he might not be getting he might not be getting the money until he reaches a certain age anyway.
The Mickey Rooney rule.
I like that.
That's going down in court radio history.
The Mickey Rooney rule.
I think we're we're all a little too young for the Mickey Rooney rule.
I want the James Cagney rule. I'm just going to whack you. That's all.
I'll take the Clint Eastwood rule.
Wow. Are you lucky? All right. Here we go. Let's go to T, who's calling in from South Philadelphia. T, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. How is everyone?
Doing fine.
Good. Thank
how are
you?
So much.
Fine,
and what's your question?
I'm calling for someone who is on a fixed income, and they live in public housing, and they just recently moved from an apartment last year due to the fact that the landlord was actually a slumlord, and he didn't want to fix anything in the housing, so he took the person to court. And the judge ruled that the person just, vacate his premises because, as the owner, he has the right to, not renew someone's lease. Not that she did anything. It's just that he didn't want to fix anything, so he felt like the smartest thing was just to get rid of her. So she moved. Now, the thing is, while she was in court, she countersued him because he had burst the main pipe in the basement, and it flooded, like, mostly all of her belongings. She was suing him for $800 in court, but the judge only gave her like $450. Okay, he didn't pay that. He actually sent her a letter saying that he was not going to pay it. I'm not giving you nothing. Okay.
I'm sorry, T. If you could just do me a big favor, because we're literally down to the last 2 minutes of the show.
Okay.
If you could just get right into what
okay.
the exact
the
question
other thing is.
Okay.
He hasn't paid that. She went to court to get the sheriffs to when you go to court when somebody doesn't pay, you go to the sheriff's office, and then they go back out. Well, the sheriff's office was never able to get in contact with him. Plus, she's about to try to take him back to court again for her $1,000 in security deposit. Now, the thing is, when the judge gives you a judgment and says that you have to pay, nothing can be done to this person if they don't pay. They can just, landlords can just do this over and over to people.
Okay, here it is. And you heard it here. You can't get blood from a stone. You know, can you collect? Yes. Does it become at some point more expensive to collect the judgment than the judgment's worth? Probably. You can enforce the judgment. The sheriff can go out and seize property, garnish bank accounts, but the person has to have property and they have to have bank accounts. You have to know where those property is. You have to know where the bank accounts are, and it's very expensive and time consuming to do it. Can it be done? Yes. As a practical matter, it may become more troublesome to do it than the judgment's worth. But there are ways to do it, and you. But as a, when you get to a certain point, it becomes so complex that you probably need counsel to assist you in that process rather than doing it yourself. Oh,
and that means that we are means at the conclusion of our
We are down to the wire.
I crossed a line that rarely I cross, but Red Chris has given me the slap back.
The gauntlet has been.
All right, Philly dropped. Speaks. My friend E. Steven is in the studio.
In the house.
All right,
and he's dressed very. Yeah. I don't know, stupid. Yeah, very lawyer-like. Yes, he's not telling us. I'm going to give him the microphone. Go ahead. Yes. Why are you dressed like that?
I'm here this morning to represent my Philly lawyer on MSNBC.
Oh,
MSNBC. 30 this morning.
Oh, awesome.
Awesome.
He's doing an MSNBC skit.
He's nice. The man. Well, listen, thank you so much for listening to us. Thanks, Dean. Thank you, David. Thank you to our guest. If you ever want to have your questions answered of a legal nature, you can always check us here on Court Radio each and every Sunday morning starting at 7 a.m. Don't you dare touch that dial. Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins is coming up now.
To download or hear more Court Radio podcasts, log on to 1079wrnb.com or mediafire.com/courtradio.